Well, hello to all of you. It is my pleasure to welcome you to the first teleclass of the 11th year of the Teleclass Education Initiative. My name is Paul Weber, and along with my colleague and friend and the co-founder of this lecture series, Professor Syed Sattar, thank you very much for joining us today and this year. We are today pleased to welcome Dr. Philip Carling to present the teleclass Optimizing Environmental Hygiene, the Key to Clostridium difficile Control. I dare say that all of us have heard of Dr. Carling's work, and most of us have been impacted by it in one form or another. Dr. Carling is the Director of Infectious Diseases and Epidemiology at Kearney Hospital in Boston. He is a teacher at the University of Boston School of Medicine and Tufts University. He is an extraordinarily popular speaker at conferences around the globe, and he is an author of a large collection of infection control articles. I found dozens of his publications in a PubMed search dating back to the mid-70s when, Phil, I think you must have been about 5 or 6 years old.
Just about.
He really came to international fame starting in 2006 with a group of articles that described the results of patient area cleaning using a novel technology. Those articles, especially those articles, have been quoted and cited many thousands of times since then. It's a great honor to have Dr. Carling with us to present this topic. Now, let me also note that the broadcast of this teleclass lecture is supported by the good folk at Ecolab. Thank you very much indeed to all you good people at Ecolab for your very valuable sponsorship. To present Optimizing Environmental Hygiene, the Key to Clostridium difficile Control, from the mighty Boston University School of Medicine, I present Dr. Philip Carling. Phil.
Thank you, Paul. I don't know how mighty, but I'll try to live up to some of what you said. I think it was very nice of you. Thank you for the introduction. Hello, everybody. I hope you can hear me. We have a fairly complex and interesting program for you this afternoon here in, at my time. I'll say beforehand, I'll remind at the end, my email, you can directly email me questions, comments, arguments, whatever you wish. I'll be more than appreciative and try to respond as I could. Or directly to Paul Weber through the Weber training. Either way, you can get to me, and I appreciate comments, thoughts, and feedback. Basically, a few points that I think all of you listening to this are pretty well aware of, but some things have changed a little bit. C. diff is now being recognized as the most common pathogen associated with HAIs. It's overtaken MRSA in frequency and certainly also in mortality. It hasn't gotten quite the press that MRSA has because it mostly strikes people who are already ill in hospital, frequently elderly, compared to MRSA, which isn't so discriminating, and there are vivid cases of serious and lethal MRSA infections in younger, healthier people that gain more wide recognition. But C. diff, in terms of its overall impact, is the major pathogen in the U.S. and probably in most other countries where it's being tracked closely. All C. diff develops the result of healthcare acquisition. There is the fact that people, when they're younger, can be colonized with C. diff just after they're born through passage because of passage through the birth canal, but this doesn't seem to cause invasive infection and either goes away or becomes very minimized over time. And so it's really something, it is the burden of preventing this infection rests on all of us who are healthcare workers directly. I think it's important to remember that the very excellent prevalent study carried out by APIC several years ago showed that the estimate was that on the basis of the prevalent study that about 7,200 patients a day in U.S. hospitals have C. diff being treated for it, and given the mortality, about one patient every 4 minutes in the United States dies from C. diff. That's not inconsequential, and I think we really have an imperative to do more about it than we have been in the past. The risk factors, most of which are known to you, The simple one is to avoid colonization. It's much easier said than done. Healthy adults don't carry C. diff very often, pretty uncommon. Hospitalized adults, as soon as you've been around the hospital for a while, very quickly your C. diff carriage rate increases. It also increases more rapidly the more ill you are, because you've been getting more broad-spectrum antibiotics, but also because your normal bowel flora is impacted by your illness. Hospital workers have more C. diff than otherwise healthy adults, and I have seen cases that have developed from healthcare workers just taking antibiotics for a minor infection, and all of a sudden they come down with C. diff. I've also seen a couple of gastroenterologists get C. diff from doing endoscopy procedures and then having to take antibiotics. The other approach in terms of risk factor is to avoid precipitating factor, and we've recognized since the disease was defined that antibiotic exposure is a key determinant for many, many cases of C. diff. Most are associated with antibiotics that alter the anaerobic flora. Clindamycin was the first that was recognized, but since most antibiotics impact the bowel flora, including particularly if it's the anaerobic flora, that those drugs such as clindamycin, such as penicillin-type drugs, cephalosporins, are very important, quinolones as well, because they both alter the flora as well as they used to kill C. diff, but in many parts of the world, particularly in Canada and the United States, many strains of C. diff are resistant to quinolone killing, so that they're not knocked down, but their ability to proliferate is actually increased substantially. The broader the spectrum, the more the problem. Bactrim, vancomycin, basically unheard of, and aminoglycosides really can't because they just don't alter the bowel flora because they don't get really into the bowel lumen because of their molecular makeup. But there are people that have said that vancomycin has been seen to precipitate C. diff. It's hard for me to believe that, knowing the pathogenesis of the disease and, of course, the fact that we use vancomycin to treat it. All hospitals are not the same. This is a message I don't think that has been widely appreciated. And if you look on this next slide, this is a C. difficile rates per 10,000 patient days, which is the way everybody in the world should be calculating their C. diff rates. We used to do it by 1,000 patient days. That's now been surpassed by this characteristic, namely 10,000 patient days is the way you determine your C. diff rates. And this is a group of hospitals I had a chance to look at with Dr. Ron Polk in University of Virginia, who was collecting antibiotic use data. And so all I did was look at ICD-9 codes, that is diagnostic codes for C. diff, which is an imperfect way of of evaluating C. diff rates. But it's interesting that this little cluster of 35 hospitals is what I looked at. This kind of information has been now looked at two or three times since I did this, which is I did not publish. And the information here is very similar over and over, and that is that a large number of hospitals have relatively low C. diff rates in the range of 5 or less, but that there's a steady increase and maybe a little bit of a shoulder, at least there was in this fairly small group of hospitals, and some hospitals have really high rates, up in the range of 20, 25. I've seen hospitals with 40. I've seen hospitals with 60. Those are basically epidemic rates. There's no way to define what the ideal rate is except zero, and there are hospitals around that have essentially no C. difficile at all. We'll come back to that. But that's pretty much uncommon. Most hospitals have some, and many hospitals have a fair amount. Hospitals that are over the range of 5 have a problem that is, I would say, more rather than less. And as you go up proportionally, it gets more of a concern. One of the interesting things I noted with this and subsequently has been noted and better documented than I did is that rates in individual hospitals tend to stay the same. They tend to bounce a little bit month to month, of course, but overall, hospitals with not too much C. diff generally stay over at least several years as hospitals without much C. diff, and hospitals with a lot of C. diff stay that way with a lot of C. diff. At the time I collected this data, I thought there'd be a correlation with antibiotic use. As you can see from this scattergram, there was no real correlation with antibiotic use. I did this both total antibiotic use. I looked at the number of subclasses of antibiotics, and there was a lot of antibiotic use data that Dr. Polk had in his database. He's now up to 75 hospitals that he has data on, although we have not looked back at C. diff because of the limitations of studying the epidemiology just by ICD-9 codes alone. But the bottom line is it didn't really correlate easily with antibiotic use. And this is a good example of the fact, I found this just recently, this is from Canada, because the folks in Quebec province are now reporting all hospitals have to report C. difficile rates per 10,000 patient days. And these are different hospitals. As you can see, there's a hospital with 15 that stays basically around 15 with maybe some improvement in the last couple of years, but several low hospitals stay quite low. And I think that it's really incumbent upon those hospitals that have higher rates to try to figure out what they're doing and do something about them. And as we'll talk about today, there's a lot that can be done to decrease the risk of C. diff. Just reporting isn't necessarily a cure. This is a good example from a very well-known hospital in the Quebec, a large hospital, where their C. diff rates in 2011 looked like they were under control for a while, and then they started slipping out of control. That was per 1,000 patient days, so if you just move that decimal point to the right, you can see they started out with rates around 2 to 4, and now they're up at a rate, at least the last one was around 8, which is certainly a little bit up there. So just reporting isn't obviously the answer, although you can debate whether it's valuable or not in terms of overall health of our society, whether reporting rates is a good thing or not such a good thing. That's quite a debatable issue. So the CDC, in the context of this issue, has recommended over the years two obvious approaches, and that is to do a better job of using antibiotics and to prevent transmission. So let's look at number one first. This has been the mainstay for the past 30 years of standard approach to decreasing C. difficile problems in healthcare is to do a better job with antibiotics. This whole concept of antibiotic stewardship is not a new one. This was the first major paper describing a program at a well-known institution at Boston City Hospital. And Dr. Finland and Dr. John McGowan, who subsequently, he was a fellow then, went on to illustrious career at the CDC and in Georgia at Emory, and is still practicing. They basically developed a very strict program for antibiotic use, and hospitals to some degree began to follow this in the 1970s and 80s, but really not to a very large degree. It really was an area that only began to show some interest back in the late 1980s and 1990s because of increasing cost of antibiotics. This is how Paul was nice enough to mention that I got involved in antibiotic stuff. Well, that was the reason was because of money, because we realized we were spending an awful lot of money on brand new shiny antibiotics, such as third generation cephalosporins at that time. It was just before quinolone, so they weren't around yet. And we tried to look at what was going on with antibiotic use, and in our hospital here, we started following closely, made some interventions to improve antibiotic use, then followed the impact of that over a number of years. This is an article published now almost 10 years ago in Itchy that described our experience, which was then subsequently compared with other hospitals. This was published in Clinical Infectious Diseases several years ago. And what this basically shows is that there's a gigantic range in antibiotic use between hospitals. We were happened to be Hospital A because we had a very vigorous stewardship program at that time. But these are hospitals actually were fairly similar in the size and distribution of the seriousness of patient illness. Medicare case mix index was not too different for any of these hospitals, and there was no correlation with Medicare case mix index. And what it basically had to do with was the fact that there are some hospitals that just had a totally laissez-faire approach to antibiotic use, and other hospitals that had stewardship programs that were more or less vigorous. And it showed there's a real potential, obviously, for some of those hospitals to do a lot better and if they were very similar to what we were experiencing. When I looked at this with Dr. Polk, the curve stayed pretty much the same for up that 35 hospital group. When you looked at antibiotic costs, which was similar to use at that time, just parenteral antibiotics, that there was, again, a fairly wide range. There's a little bit wider range in hospital type here than there was in our earlier study. But back in the early 2000s, there was a lot of hospitals using a lot of antibiotics, more than other hospitals. So there was opportunity for improvement. But the real question was, besides the value of stewardship, which we, after forgetting for a while, which we now are starting to reappreciate, I would say, over the last 3 years, we're starting to reappreciate the need for antibiotic stewardship that we had sort of forgotten about for a decade or two, because of the, probably mostly because the quinolones are so easy to use and relatively inexpensive that everybody just used them like water and forgot about the concepts of stewardship. But now we're paying the price for that, as everybody knows. Was there an impact of this program on resistant organisms? Well, this whole issue was looked at in a very sophisticated manner by Dr. Mark Wilcox. This is a wonderful article for those of you that are serious epidemiologists out there. I think this is probably one of the best meta-type analyses I've ever seen published. It's sophisticated far beyond my ability to understand it, and I welcome people to look at this as a very interesting model for evaluating multiple studies, because I think they did an exemplary job of it when this was published a couple of years ago. They basically looked at every study that claimed to have an impact of antibiotics on hospital infections. They only found out of the 300 studies they looked at, only 66 had any meaningful data analysis. They had to unfortunately cull the group down further, and really what it came out to be was that some programs, only four studies were favorable. There were 8 studies that were questionable, and 4 studies that were really questionable is because it was hard to evaluate what was going on. So they really looked at just a fairly small number of studies. These studies only went through 2003. I'll reiterate that point because since this study, there have been other reports of the impact of stewardship programs on antibiotic resistance and on antibiotic resistance, and some of them have shown some impact that were well-done studies. So there is better data than was shown here, but what's important about this is that this next slide here, the impact on C. difficile disease was relatively small. Without taking a long time to explain what looks like a somewhat complicated chart, is that if the impact was favorable, it was to the left of the vertical line, and the lower down it was the higher the impact. So you can see that there are a number of studies that showed favorable impact on C. diff rates, but that none of the studies, including our study, showed a very large impact. It was there, but it was not large when you measured it. And I think the subsequent data that's occurred over the past few years would support that antibiotic control can help, but it doesn't necessarily help a lot. Now, that might not be so true in an epidemic situation, such as, for example, was the problem in many hospitals in Canada a few years ago when the quinolone-resistant antibiotic strains of C. diff were dominating. And there are some good studies that show that in that specific situation, that restricting quinolone use had a favorable impact. But this was programs that looked at overall antibiotic use rather than just targeted antibiotic use, which certainly was important in those studies, but is not the universal cure-all. The CDC basically says when you have C. diff issues, this is from their slide set that talks about C. difficile control, and we mentioned the exposure issue, and the only other thing that can be done, as you can see, that's even modifiable at all, is to decrease acquisition. All those other risk factors are not really very modifiable, as you can appreciate by looking at them. So this gets us to the hospital environment, which I know many of you are aware that has been a particular interest of mine for a few years, and maybe a bias, and so I again ask you to look at this information carefully and with a skeptical eye, if you wish, to see if you believe what I think is true, and that is that we're overlooking the environment in many situations in terms of controlling as being a factor that we can use to control C. diff. The environment is contaminated. These are older studies. There have been a couple of newer studies which basically show the same thing, looking at the right-hand column with C. diff there. As you might guess, when you get closer around toilet surfaces, you're going to find more C. diff than you would otherwise. But it's interesting. The only one study ever looked at bedpan cleaners, which you'd think would be pretty heavily contaminated. And that study showed, as you might expect, that you could find C. diff when you had patients in that hospital with C. diff on bedpan cleaners, which were supposed to be cleaned between patients, of course. The overall rates of C. diff in terms of contaminated objects hover around 30 to 40%. This has been looked at in many subsequent studies since I collated this data about 7 years ago, and the numbers are basically about the same. In fact, they stay the same for MRSA and VRE. That about, I think the easy number to remember is about 40% of surfaces are easily found positive in most hospitals with average routine cleaning of the environment, both daily and terminal cleaning. Approximately 40% will be found positive for one or more of these organisms. How does it get there? Well, I think none of you would have trouble guessing how C. diff gets to the environment. It's, of course, from the patients with C. diff disease. But this very important study, published just a couple of years ago by Dr. Donsky's group in Cleveland, showed very clearly that while patients with C. diff, CDAD, actively ill with it, had skin contamination, the top half of the bars, you might not be surprised that 80% of people that had active C. diff could culture find it on their skin, and that asymptomatic carriers that were no longer having diarrhea, that's interesting, 64% still had it overall on any site on their skin. And even some non-carriers who basically didn't have it in their stool had it on their skin. Relatively low, but still rather surprising. But then the answer, of course, comes, I think, from the fact that the near environment surfaces around patients with active C. diff, that's as much contaminated as their skin is, and I think that it's that's maybe not too surprising. But if you look at the fact that asymptomatic carriers who don't any longer have diarrhea have a 60% incidence of any environmental surface being positive for C. diff, and the disturbing fact that 30% of surfaces in where they did this study had C. diff, even if they weren't people that were either asymptomatic carriers or people with C. diff in that room. This number, curiously enough, is not much different from what I just showed you before, and that is that 30% of surfaces in general are contaminated with C. diff. So the answer is it's out there on surfaces. It does correlate with being near patients with either C. diff or who are getting over having C. diff, or no longer symptomatic, but that it is also on surfaces that are not correlated with those patients. Yeah, this is another very good study that gives us a sense of this issue of environmental contamination. This came out a couple of years ago in the Journal of Hospital Infections. It's the only quantitative study that I've ever come across so far that looked at how much C. diff there is. In other words, not just a positive culture, but how much there was. This was with patients in red, our CDAD positive patients. Those are people that were ill. And the number itself doesn't quite correlate with the colonies of C. diff, but just let's look at the relative number. It's a PCR reading, so it's a relative number. So patient hands had a lot on their hands. That's not surprising. But the near environment and even the distant environment around patients that had C. diff, the distant means outside the room, nearby in the hallway in the nursing station, had about half as much quantitatively C. diff, and healthcare workers' hands also had a fair bit. Maybe they weren't doing good hand hygiene, but we'll come back to that later on if we have time about hand hygiene. The issue here is that this just reinforces the other previous data. Can it be transmitted from the environment to patients? Well, this is something that really hasn't been studied too extensively, only actually one study for C. diff. But there's no reason to believe that it's much different than it is for other pathogens. We now know, as of this month, that these eight studies, they're actually nine, but two of them weren't able to be quantified very well, so I couldn't compare it to the others. But it was really these studies that were the ones that first alerted us to the really significant importance of the of residual environmental contamination with environmental pathogens and transmission to susceptible patients. It was Dr. Susan Wang at the Brigham and Women's Hospital who was the first to ask a very simple question and came out with some very interesting results, which have subsequently been reinforced numerous times. And that is that if you go into a room as the next occupant after a room has been with a patient in it that had either MRSA, VRE, C. diff, Pseudomonas, or now most recently Acinetobacter, that you have a substantially increased risk of acquiring one of those organisms from the patient that was previously in that room. And obviously the only explanation for that would be that there was residual environmental contamination due to suboptimal or maybe incomplete thoroughness of environmental hygiene practice, cleaning. As I said, there's only one study, the Shaughnessy study, that was in abstract when I put this slide together, but it's been published in Infection Control and Hospital Epidemiology last year with an editorial that went with it that I highly recommend to you that talks about controlling C. diff, and it gives a lot of very up-to-date references on the subject. What Shaughnessy and colleagues found is that in an ICU setting, the prior room occupancy risk basically increased the chances of acquiring C. diff by 110% over above patients that had no prior CD occupancy risk for the room that they were occupying in the ICU. The study was carefully done. It was in an ICU setting, which might make the transmission a little bit more, or maybe even substantially more. It's never been looked at yet otherwise. I hope somebody does. I think they'll probably find fairly similar results, but maybe not quite as striking on the general floors, but it's not been really looked at yet. But it certainly was clearly evident and very statistically significant. So why is C. diff being transmitted to susceptible patients in U.S. hospitals? I think I've shown you my concern and my bias about this, and that is that we're not maybe doing as good a job of what we call terminal cleaning, as well as probably daily cleaning, as we think we should or are doing according to the policies that we've written for many, many years that ask our environmental services folks to do certain procedures in terms of cleaning. These studies, some of which we've published, all of which have been presented, represent many different settings. I call them different venues in healthcare, and have shown fairly similar results, namely that about 40%, or maybe even a little bit less, of surfaces are being cleaned to a degree of thoroughness that would be optimal. Now, can you get to perfect? Can you get to 100%? That's sort of another subject. The answer is, with proper training, with proper feedback, we've seen the better part of 100 hospitals now doing just that and getting up to, well, close to 80%, if not close to 100% of thoroughness of cleaning by improving their practices. But there's plenty of opportunity for improvement in all different kinds of settings, from ambulatory to clinics to dialysis centers. We're talking primarily about C. diff. We relate C. diff to in-hospital settings. But Dr. Donsky's group, again, just recently published some very striking results looking at C. diff environmental contamination in outpatient settings and showing that it was almost as frequent as it was in inpatient settings in the clinics in their hospitals that they related to. And so it's out there in many different settings, and there's obviously less than optimal cleaning in many different settings. Next slide. I'm sorry, I didn't mention that. The red arrow, I'm sorry, got slipped up in this slide. It really, the mean is around 32%. It looked a little bit high. But this is now with over 110,000 objects monitored as to whether they were being cleaned according to policy. The system we used does not require a disinfectant. It works equally with a detergent or even plain water to remove the fluorescent targets that we developed to see if an object was being cleaned the way it was supposed to be cleaned by policy. I do want to point out that all of this work, those 110,000 objects, All that was done by volunteers, by infection preventionists, and some hospital epidemiologists who believed this whole subject was important and have really, I think, enabled us to see the world a little bit differently than would have been the case if we had to wait around to try to get funding to do studies a couple of years ago that nobody would have believed of much relevance. Can better cleaning favorably impact environmental contamination with C. diff? Obviously, the next question. It's all well and good to do a better job cleaning. We'd all like to see that and think it's a good idea, but it doesn't make a difference. The answer is probably, but we don't know absolutely yet. The reason is probably is because of this, and that is, this is a chart just showing all the studies reporting a favorable impact of enhanced environmental hygiene during an outbreak. In other words, these are articles that people have published saying, oh my goodness, we had a high rate of C. diff in our hospital. We went and we started using bleach, and we started doing this, that, and the other thing, and we were able to, and we did some antibiotic management, and we did multi-level intervention, and we improved environmental hygiene by talking to the environmental services staff, and our rates went down substantially because of the environmental hygiene being improved or the use of bleach. The problem with these studies, I think many of you would quickly say, is number one, they're essentially all in outbreak settings. These are not endemic settings. Number two is that they were not, and none of them were controlled for the thoroughness of cleaning. And so it's very possible that it's thoroughness because, or maybe it was bleach. The studies that have been done using bleach to help control C. diff outbreaks have all been very limited because none of the studies yet done to date have ever looked at thoroughness at the same time as looking at the impact of bleach. So, you know, we recommend bleach in outbreak situations, but it's not yet clear whether there's any validity to that recommendation. It makes sense because we know bleach kills C. diff, whereas other disinfectants don't kill C. diff spores. But as to whether it's really necessary to use a chemical that kills C. diff spores or whether it's just necessary to improve environmental hygiene by thoroughness improvement is yet to be determined. That question is in the process of being answered by some research groups around in the U.S. and hopefully maybe overseas as well in the rest of the world where there is C. diff. But I can tell you it's a very important question that needs to be answered, and now that we know how to monitor the thoroughness of environmental hygiene, we can hopefully start to answer the question of how important is the disinfectant or detergent that we're using in controlling C. diff. The answer has not yet been established. But there's a lot of hint here, so there's a lot of smoke, I would say. There's also a study that has shown us that certainly improved environmental hygiene can decrease on an individual research level, if you will, research-type study, environmental contamination. This study, again, by Dr. Donsky's group, a very hard-working crew and very dedicated to studying C. diff in particular and environmental issues in particular in recent years. What they showed very nicely in this study from BMC infectious diseases is that C. diff contamination of the environment, these are patients that had C. diff, they were C. diff positive patients, had environmental contamination that, as you can see, averaged out around 40%, which is, again, the number we've talked about before. After routine housekeeping, cleaning, there was some decrease, but not as much. And then after disinfection by a, quote, research team, they only had one positive culture in those nine rooms when they went back and redid them after a period of time after the routine housekeeping data was collected. What was the research team? The research team were a couple of infection preventionists and hospital epidemiologists who really went and cleaned the room vigorously. At the time, they didn't have any way of monitoring thoroughness of cleaning for this study, and so it wasn't able to correlate that directly with it, but certainly by being more assiduous, they saw decreased environmental contamination. One of the interesting and important things about this study is that in all nine patient rooms, they were using a bleach solution for cleaning. And so that after housekeeping, despite using bleach, the level of contamination only decreased somewhat compared to before it was cleaned. And it wasn't until thoroughness of cleaning improved that they were able to see a dramatic resolution of contamination of surfaces around the patients. So it certainly looks like that's an important issue, this thoroughness issue. This is another article. This is a newer article, a little bit hard to read because the type is small and the thing. But without physical effort, cleaning role of the chemicals is greatly limited. This study was from BMC Infectious Diseases in 2010. And what this basically shows is that even if you use bleach in the top bar, the A chart on top there, just put it on the surface, that you didn't have much impact at all of anything. But in the lower bar, lower box, lower graphic, what it shows is that the first three bars show accelerated peroxide type compounds having actually some impact on C. diff spores when they improved the physical effort of cleaning. They actually didn't clean more surfaces, but they just cleaned the surfaces they were studying better. And there was one chemical that didn't have much impact at all, even with better cleaning. So maybe using water alone is not going to be good for getting rid of C. diff spores. They're very sticky. And down here, you can see that that with bleach, with low concentrations of bleach, it wasn't much different. With higher concentrations, by the time it starts to get to a level where it's difficult to use, that you start to see a real impact. But bleach alone, as you can see above, is not enough. Now, you'd say, was organic matter in the way in preventing the bleach from working? In this experimental study, no, because these were inoculated pieces of steel that were inoculated with known amounts of C. diff spores. And so there wasn't the issue of organic material, which I think hopefully all of you know, is that when you use bleach, you have to clean first to get rid of any organic material before you can use a bleach. And then the bleach must be removed from the surface, otherwise you end up with corrosion problems, which, of course, some of you know you end up to some degree with anyway, depending upon where you're using the bleach. There, you can see an impact of decreasing C. diff spores by other than routine cleaning or even using bleach. And I think everybody here has heard that the hydrogen peroxide vapor approach or even the ultraviolet light approach has been suggested to be useful in controlling C. diff. There haven't been any studies of the UV light that have been done to carefully evaluate this, but this is a small study by Dr. John Boyce in Connecticut, and what they showed very nicely was that their surface contamination in their hospital at this point was running around 25% of surfaces in patients near patient environment, in patients that had C. diff, but that after taking the patient out of the room and using the cleaning the room with routine cleaning practice and then using the HPV, that they could get the surfaces down to zero. Not too surprising for those of you that know about hydrogen peroxide vapor. It certainly is effective in killing spores, though it takes longer than it does to kill vegetative forms. What they saw also with this for a short period of time was that there was an improvement in their C. diff rate. Their C. diff rate per 1,000 patient days, again, move the decimal point over to the right one for a more up-to-date number, you can see fell from around 18 down to around 8. But right away, from what I was saying before, you'd say, uh-oh, this was an outbreak situation. This wasn't a routine situation. They had an awful lot of C. diff in that hospital at that time they were doing this. And so once again, we're not looking at an endemic issue. Unfortunately, we're looking at an outbreak issue. So it's a little hard to evaluate. And interestingly enough, secondarily, is that the rate improved by decreasing, by killing C. diff with hydrogen peroxide vapor in many patients' rooms. But as you can see, it didn't go down necessarily to a level that anybody would be completely happy with as being an acceptable, if not ideal, level. So hydrogen peroxide vapor works, but it also has challenging issues around it. But it's important to recognize that at least it works. Can improved disinfection cleaning, just routine cleaning, lead to decreased healthcare-associated, healthcare-onset CDI? Well, this has been looked at once so far, and I think a very interesting study that is has not been, as far as I know, maybe published yet. I heard that Dr. Noel and the other folks that were involved in this amazingly large cooperative are in the process of publishing it. But what they did was, between 2007 and 2009, a 40-hospital group in New York did a CDI collaborative, such as is happening in many states around the U.S. now, to get their act together, if you will, and as a group work on the C. diff as a problem. Their pre-intervention rate for this group of hospitals averaged 8.1, and they all together did similar education. They developed check sheets for the environmental services staff. Their thoroughness of cleaning was evaluated basically by the environmental staff themselves, and they asked the question, are you doing a better job of cleaning now that we've educated you? So it was certainly an idea, and they also used some glitter bug lotion for teaching. It wasn't useful for monitoring, so they didn't use it for monitoring. So they basically used it for some teaching, which it certainly works for. But I think that it's hard to know exactly how much the thoroughness of cleaning improved, but whatever was done together with working on antibiotic management, 70% of this hospital group showed an average decrease of 26%, modest, not gigantic, but certainly modest, down to, showed a significant decrease. The mean for the system was about a 15% decrease overall. So it was certainly there. It was only measured over a relatively short period of time because the program went on, but they didn't, unfortunately, have the opportunity to measure out as long as they wanted to. Or maybe they have been doing that now. Hopefully they were able to and report that one of these days in the near future. So keep an eye out for what should be a very useful and interesting study on this issue when it gets published. So we look like we have some ways of approaching C. diff as a problem, but one of the questions that comes up frequently is, you know, how much of a cost issue is this? Since there's some new information about this, I thought I'd share this with you in the last part of the talk here. There's basically several ways of estimating the cost of healthcare onset CDI. The first way that was approached back in 2000 was looking at excess length of stay, because if you have somebody staying in the hospital longer, obviously it costs the insurers, all of us ultimately, more to take care of those patients. But it was quickly realized that that's the validity of looking at that as an overall increased cost depend upon the hospitals having a high census, because if the hospital, let's say, has a 40% census, then it doesn't make much difference in terms of the cost of the institution or maybe even to the system if there was people staying longer because they had C. diff. Dr. Eric DeBerke at University of Washington, St. Louis, Missouri, has been interested in this issue for quite a few years, and he did the first really sophisticated studies of the cost of C. diff, and he used the term excess attributable cost. This is a very useful term, and it's applicable to other hospital-associated infections because they do increase the cost of caring for a patient. What he determined through very large and sophisticated epidemiologic data mining, if you will, is that the excess attributable cost of a C. diff infection is around $6,000. But as I noted there, we all pay for that. That's basically reimbursed cost. It's big and it's significant in our healthcare dollars, but it is something that's not the individual hospital's cost so much as it is, let's say, society's cost in terms of dollars. A new approach to this is to look merely at the calculated direct cost. One healthcare system that shared data with me, that self-insured, if you will, it's a closed system, saw that their cost per case was around $22,000, a lot more. Some of this was because it was self-insured, and the other was because they had fairly high occupancy rates, and so it was more detrimental on their bottom line, if you will, as a single case of C. diff. As I say, though, this has not been published yet. what has been presented at the IDSA meeting 3 years ago, 2009, was that a group from Harvard University School of Public Health and Cardinal Health looked at 270,000 patient admissions and started and figured out a way of looking at excess cost of a range of healthcare-associated infections, but as not just as excess attributable cost, but attributable net loss. In other words, this is non-reimbursed loss to the hospital because all healthcare-associated infections cost more than the reimbursement makes up for, but they vary as to how much that is, and that had never been calculated before. And this very carefully done study showed that the direct cost to the hospital out of pocket for each case of C. diff is around $5,400. That's added on, if you will, to the systemic cost of C. diff that's reimbursed of about $6,000. And interestingly enough, that's only a factor of 100% difference to the $22,000 factor. So the bottom line here is that looking at this as carefully as we can nowadays, that there is very significant cost that's both direct, that is, to all of us that support the health insurance that we all have, or indirect, because the hospitals lose money, about that much money on each active case of C. diff that they care for. I believe this, no matter who is paying or how much, hospital onset C. diff is a serious hole in the bottom line of the boat. It's an issue, we're not even talking about the morbidity and mortality, but just the economics, because people seem to want to talk about economics more than just trying to do better for our patients and listen more when you talk economic arguments. That it's really, it is, my concept of it is, it's a hole in the bottom of the boat that could be fixed if we wanted to pay more attention to it in a more careful way. Final thought, though, about C. diff is that I believe the C. diff rates are a little bit like the canary here in this nice little photograph, the canary in the coal mine. Namely, that looking at your C. diff rates in your hospital, I think, will give you some insight as to where your environmental hygiene issues are overall. If your rates are really low, there's a couple of different reasons that they could be low. You could be really lucky and just be in a part of the world where there's not much C. diff, or a part of the country where there's not much C. diff. You could be having exquisitely good antibiotic management for a long time. It took us about a year to see the impact of a stewardship, tight stewardship program on C. diff rates when nothing else was changing, for endemic rates, which dropped by about 70% decrease. It was quite substantial, but it took a while to occur. This has been seen in terms of decreasing rates with antibiotic stewardship, as I said, with individual antibiotics such as quinolones, but I think that has that's a rather focal approach, and actually occurred more quickly. When you have a single antibiotic that's causing your problem, it seems like the C. diff issue responds more rapidly to that, control that antibiotic. But if you're, those are the possibilities, or that you're doing a great job in environmental services and keeping your hospital clean, or maybe all the above. But if your rates are high, or higher, or high-ish, maybe you ought to be thinking about several different issues that we've already gone through and as being maybe contributory and maybe remedial. So thank you for inviting me, Paul, to give the presentation today. If it's possible to take questions, I'd be happy to try to take questions. I know that that's logistically sometimes challenging, but again, people are welcome to email me or email Weber Training. Thank you very much.
Dr. Carling, thank you very much. An outstanding presentation. In developing countries, Clostridium difficile is not an issue.
Right.
For reasons I don't fully understand, is it because of reduced antibiotic use? Certainly the hospitals are no cleaner, in most cases less so, than in developed countries.
Excellent observation, and it is true. And it probably has more to do with the fact that that it just isn't there yet. People haven't been colonized. It hasn't started to spread. I mean, you know, there was a time when we were using antibiotics that were broad spectrum like we are now. We had, back when C. diff was recognized as a disease in the early 1980s, we had cephalosporins have been around since the early 60s. Broad-spectrum penicillins, ampicillin, have been around since the late 1950s. We've been using plenty of antibiotics. We thought many times in those days that we could prevent surgical wound infections by putting people on antibiotics for a week or two after surgery. It was a very common practice in those days. We know that that's completely without any validity anymore. But there was a lot of antibiotic use, and yet it really didn't rear its ugly head until clindamycin became such a popular antibiotic in the early 1980s because it's a great antibiotic. It's tremendous, and that was a time when people were starting to appreciate the importance of anaerobic infections, and this is a great antibiotic, especially when we realized that Bacteroides fragilis in particular was resistant to penicillin, unlike many anaerobes that are sensitive to penicillin. And so clindamycin use skyrocketed in the early late 1970s, early 1980s. And I think, you know, that probably was what was the stimulus to spreading so much C. diff here in the U.S. and in our nearby friends north and south of us particularly.
Perhaps it might have been because their intestinal flora is so much more varied and vast because of the conditions in which many of them live.
That's great. All we got to do is now get some volunteers to take C. difficile spores from some places like that and see if they can be colonized. I think you might have trouble getting volunteers, though. But I think your speculation is very, very, very reasonable, and I think it's certainly plausible. I mean, we know so little about the biome makeup of the GI tract and what keeps it stable and what makes it unstable. We really don't even know, you know, exactly why it is that all of a sudden C. diff that's been hanging out gets turned on. It turns out that most cases of C. diff occur fairly shortly after a person acquires a C. diff. We used to think a few years ago that it was just hanging out there waiting for the antibiotic to come along, but it turns out that's not quite so. They have to get the organism fairly quickly and then get it, because then get the antibiotic within a certain period of time, maybe weeks or maybe even at most months, but not years, because we can get antibodies to the C. diff that we have, and then we don't have any problem. We just carry it, and it doesn't cause problems if we have antibodies to it. But that takes a while to get those antibodies.
That's interesting. I thought it was natural flora.
Yeah, well, it can be. That's part of the curious thing, is that, you know, but again, it can be probably doing nothing. And look at the 15% of healthcare workers you can find it in low concentration in the stool, and yet a lot of healthcare workers take antibiotics without having C. diff all the time because they're healthy people compared to the people we have hospitalized.
On that point, on your fourth slide, and this is a question that came to me by email, on your fourth slide there was a reference that I understand to say that somebody spends one day in a hospital facility, they have a 3% chance of Clostridium difficile contraction, 1 week, 20%, 4 weeks, 50%. Now, are these people showing symptoms?
Colonization.
I got you.
Right.
Thank you very much to Ecolab for their sponsorship of this teleclass broadcast. These guys have been very good to us in past years, and I thank them again for participating as a sponsor of one of our teleclass broadcasts. The teleclass education program runs at a loss every year. It's run entirely by volunteers at a not-for-profit basis, and the funding that we receive from corporate sponsors like Ecolab is extremely valuable to us. And so I thank all of you at Ecolab for your generosity. I thank you, Professor Dr. Carling, for another extremely good lecture. You gave two teleclass lectures before, and I believe both of those are available in the recordings library. If people want to go to the free access recordings library, enter a keyword of Carling or something, and you'll be able to get access to the recordings and the slides, the handouts there. So Dr. Carling, thank you very much for giving this lecture again today. It was very, very good.
More than welcome, Paul, and I appreciate it very much. I look forward to questions, comments from anybody, anytime.
And to everyone else who has joined us, thank you very much for joining us, and I'll look forward to speaking with you again very soon. Goodbye.